I want to make sure people do understand that for a grand jury to reject even one of the charges, that is so unbelievably rare. In my experience, I was in the department for 21 years. It never happened.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and George is away today. And because I had so much fun with Andrew Weissman last time he joined me, I asked him to come back again. Andrew is a law professor at NYU, and you may know him from MSNBC or his podcast with Mary McCord called Main Justice. Andrew, thanks for being here. Thanks for coming back.
Great to be here. But you know, when I listen to the title of this podcast, it's like Hamlet without Hamlet. So it's just us two.
It's just us two. But here's the thing. It's called George Conway Explains It All because I was doing like a throwback to Clarissa Explains It All, which was like a show on Nickelodeon when I was a teen. Let me tell you, he doesn't explain it all. He explains
exactly.
A lot. He explains a lot.
Exactly.
George and I have already sort of reframed this. We used to say, well, we're going to do a podcast about the legal news, but now it is obviously just a podcast about the illegal news because that is all the news fit to print. And obviously the big legal news of the week is the federal indictment of former FBI Director James Comey in the Eastern District of Virginia. And I think you've said that this act crossed a red line for the administration, which in an administration that is professionalized crossing red lines, that still seems like this might be a new kind of Rubicon. So walk me through why this is such a dangerous use of executive power.
The way I think about it is, what are the things that are separating us from Russia? When I think almost everyone who's listening to this, you know, grew up in America and you're thinking, well, we're not like Russia. You can add lots of other countries, but I'm going to take them as an example. And one is you don't think of show trials. You think of checks and balances. You think of judiciary. You think of the Congress. You think that you can't just charge anyone you want, that there are grand juries and trial juries and judges. And there's all of this legal process. And the Department of Justice post-Watergate operates to care about facts and law. And you don't just, for instance, have a policy, which is we're only going to go getting Democrats or, you know, vice versa, the Democrats when they're in power saying, oh, we're only going to go after Republicans. All of that is like, you think, well, this is a given. We're a rule of law country. And that sort of political corruption you see around the globe is something that doesn't happen here because we are sort of this, even though we're flawed and there's lots of flaws in our history, we aspire to be this shining city on the hill. This is gone. This is creating the Department of Justice as a loaded gun to be used politically. And this one of the things that's my big take home is it doesn't matter if the Comey case is a total loser for Donald Trump, because I think it will be. It still works for him in the same way that the executive orders about the law firms still works for him, because it instills fear in people and it shuts them up, because you're sitting there going, oh, here's a guy who has got so much control over every lever of power. He can aim it at anyone and cause incredible damage. Better to be silent. I think James Comey is going to fight like hell. And all signs are this is an incredibly weak indictment. But I think the damage is done no matter what.
So I'm out here in Toronto, which is why I'm in this hotel room. We're doing some live shows. And at the show last night, we were talking about Comey. And I was working on a theory, in part because I saw Comey, who I should say I know a little bit. We're on the Kettering Foundation. Like, he's a colleague. We're on a board together. But when he did this very sort of passionate pushback, he did this video straight to camera. He quotes his daughter. He doesn't name her, but for people who've been following this, he sort of quotes his daughter about refusing to live on our knees. And it was this very defiant post. And I know James Comey is going to have the best lawyers against their incredibly weak case. And is there not some, I understand, of course, what you mean about the chilling of civic spaces, the chilling of people who might speak out. Or is it possible that James Comey pushing back and winning does something to galvanize people? Because I'll say, like, the depressing part is the ABCs and the CBSs and the people who cave, the law firms. When people fight back and they win, like Jimmy Kimmel did recently, I feel like it actually has a good effect.
Absolutely. So, you know, I have been saying that this I think will blow up in Donald Trump's face in terms of the specific. But, you know, I think of the world as sort of a bell curve. And this is sort of maybe borrowing a page from you, Sarah, in terms of thinking about politics. It's like, you know, you don't have to win all the time. You just have to win enough of the people enough of the time, not to, you know, to crib from Abraham Lincoln. There's no question the Jimmy Kimmel thing was a huge spectacular win for the First Amendment. But on the other hand, Jimmy Kimmel was able to galvanize public sentiment. He is widely viewed. What happens to this comedian on late night TV was sort of widely shared. And it was an attack that everyone could see as an attack on themselves as well, the sort of the First Amendment right. And it also made Donald Trump look so thin-skinned. I mean, he, as Jimmy Kimmel said, like all of this is happening because he can't take a joke. Which, you know, was just a wonderful turn of phrase. James Comey is a wonderful speaker. It is a big thing, I think, for people in the legal world, people who follow the Department of Justice. It's a big deal. It doesn't have the same resonance. And so I hope you're right, but I think that there still will be the people who are afraid, who are thinking, you know what, I don't have the resources of a James Comey. I can't command and galvanize the media in the same way. I don't have free legal resources and that infrastructure to fight back. And so there will be the concern is that even if he wins, there will be enough people who are like, I don't want this to happen to me. I'm hoping you're right. And by the way, I think that James Comey is going to win. I mean, all signs are that this is incredibly weak. And I think the thing that I'm looking for this week is whether his team asks for an immediate trial. To me, that is going to be the clear tell if they know this is such a weak case. And let me just make sure people understand what some of the indications are. And this is not the idea that, you know, the career people said that you don't bring the case, the Trump appointed U.S. attorney who had to resign, said don't bring the case. But there's more than that. The grand jurors didn't vote one of the three charges, so they only could go forward on two. But even with respect to those two, the grand jury vote was 14 out of 23. So there are 23 grand jurors. You have to get 12 in order to go forward. They got 14, so just a little bit over that bare majority. I want to make sure people understand what that signals going forward. In the grand jury, you doesn't have to be unanimous. It just is 12 out of 23 people. So the unanimity is not there. It just has to be a bare majority. Second, the standard, sorry to get all legal in the weeds, but the standard is probable cause. That's a really, really low standard. Let's assume that's like 20%. So both the low standard and you're not unanimous, that's the grand jury standard. This is going to go to a trial jury. So a criminal trial jury, there are two things that are required to get a conviction. Unanimous. It has to be unanimous. All 12 of the jurors have to agree. You can't have one say no. If you have one say no, it's out. You do not win. Second, the standard is not probable cause. It's beyond a reasonable doubt. So the signal to the U.S. Attorney's Office when it's 14 out of 23 on two of the charges is good luck getting a beyond a reasonable doubt verdict unanimously. I mean, that's such a strong signal that this is a weak case.
Yeah, I mean, and people should understand, again, I'm not the lawyer on this, but I do now know enough to know that in these grand juries, basically only the prosecution gets to make their case. They hear defense, so they just hear the very best version that you could get. But even with that, you know, I had done something when it was started to be reported that this might happen to James Comey. I had hopped on with Ben Wittes, and he wasn't sure at all that a grand jury would indict. Are you surprised that the grand jury indicted at all? Like they could even get 14?
You know, I don't know the answer to that because you don't know what the presentation was. And, you know, the thing that gives me enormous pause is I'm very concerned about who was in the grand jury on the prosecution side. As just to make sure people understand, there's no judge, there's no defense lawyer, as you said. It's just the government presenting its case. We don't know exactly what was said to them. We don't know if they followed all the rules. We don't know if they read the charges correctly. I mean, none of that is there. We certainly know that they're not legally required, the government isn't, to present exculpatory evidence. In other words, if they have evidence contrary to what they're presenting, they do not, under the law, need to do it. Now, DOJ practice is that you do it. But we don't know if Lindsay Halligan, the new, you know, Trump-appointed insurance lawyer with no prosecutorial experience, we don't know if she presented any of that contrary evidence. We don't know if Jim Comey asked to testify or to have somebody else testify and was rebuffed. He would have a right to do that. So we just don't have a sense of that going in. I want to make sure people do understand, though, that for a grand jury to reject even one of the charges, and here we know they rejected one of the three, that is so unbelievably rare. In my experience, I was in the department for 21 years. It never happened. It just doesn't happen. And you know why, Sarah? It's not because the grand jurors are rubber stamps. It's because when you go to the grand jury, if you are a normal prosecutor, whether in a Republican or Democratic administration, you go in knowing that you need proof beyond a reasonable doubt to win the case at trial. You're not trying to just sail over the probable cause standard, because that's not going to do you any good. Because your whole point is that you want to be able to win your case, and you wouldn't subject somebody to an indictment unless you could do that. Here, it seems really clear that, or I should say that all signs are, they're perfectly happy to subject James Comey to the indictment, even though there's substantial reason to think they're never, ever going to get a criminal conviction.
You know those nights when you just don't sleep, and the next day you're dragging, exhausted, and everything feels harder? That's where CBD from CB Distillery can make a real difference. But it's not just sleep. CB Distillery has solutions that work with your body to help with stress, pain after exercise, even mood and focus. And it's all made with the highest quality, clean ingredients, no fillers, just premium CBD. Imagine waking up rested or enjoying your day without those nagging aches and pains. That's the real win of CB Distillery solutions. That's why over 2 million people trust CB Distillery. You know, I've been trying to drink less, and there's something about pouring something into a glass to unwind, but it doesn't give you the hangover the next day. I can't do 1,000 podcasts and live shows and be hungover. I just can't do it anymore. I'm 45. But that is one of the things I like about CB Distillery is, if you want better sleep and you want less stress, feeling good in your own skin again, you should try the CBD from CB Distillery. And right now you can save 25% off your entire purchase. Visit CB Distillery and use promo code AskGeorge. That's cbdistillery.com, promo code AskGeorge, cbdistillery.com. Get the best sleep that you can have in your mid-40s with CB Distillery. There are some heightened protections baked into the criminal prosecutions, right? So do you have some hope that even if DOJ's prosecution of political enemies ratchets up, some of the procedural and constitutional protections will hold? Because you're talking right now about like normal DOJ lawyers, but like, can we be hopeful that the normal DOJ stuff will come through?
Well, one thing that I think has not come through is the checks within the Department of Justice. So as I said, the Department of Justice guidelines that govern what you're supposed to do in the department, these are attorney general guidelines, are that you cannot bring a case unless you have a reasonable expectation, this is like my paraphrasing, that you can win at trial beyond a reasonable doubt. And I don't know if you only get 14 out of 23 on some of the charges you propose, how you meet that standard. So that suggests to me that Pam Bondi and Todd Blanche are not subjecting sort of the so-called enemies to that same standard. I do think that when you get to a trial jury and you get to the courts, you do still have a lot of protections. But just remember, that's after the person is subjected to the opprobrium and the expense and the vilification of being charged and the humiliation of it. I mean, all of that. But yes, judges can decide that this is outrageous government conduct. They may decide that this is a vindictive prosecution. Juries can reject the case. A judge, if requested, and in the Eastern District of Virginia, it's the so-called rocket docket, that you could end up with a judge saying, you know what, if the defense wants an immediate trial, that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to catch the government flat-footed, which in this case, I think is highly likely that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, because Halligan, I mean, and maybe we said this, maybe we didn't. Sometimes we can assume people know this, but they were not going to prosecute this case. Like the DOJ lawyers in there were like, no, there's no evidence. It's a weak, it's just not there. So they fired that person. This is where when Trump sent, he sent a bleat, one of his truths, and it also looked maybe like a DM to Pam Bondi. Like it was unclear because he was addressing her directly and saying, we got to go after these guys. We got to go get them. It's not happening fast enough. And also get rid of that other person and get this new person in there. And this Lindsay Halligan is just, what is she? She's a Trump lawyer, but she has no experience at all. She has is loyalty, right?
Loyalty and a background in insurance. I think this may have been the first time she's ever been in the grand jury. There are a lot of rules about what you can and cannot do. And let's just compare this to under Trump 1.0, Bill Barr had John Durham do essentially the same thing, which is sort of a targeted investigation, but at least there was an investigation to sort of target James Comey and the sort of Crossfire Hurricane investigation. And that went on and on and on. And John Durham, at least, had been a career prosecutor. He knew how to do investigations. He brought two criminal cases, and he'd managed to do something remarkable. And this is somebody who at least had an investigation, had the background. In those two cases, he managed to convince 24 jurors unanimously that the defendants should be acquitted. He lost all of them. He didn't even get a mistrial. A mistrial is when the jurors are conflicted. In other words, even if you have, two jurors who say there should be a conviction and 22 that say no, aggregating the two trials, then you'd have a mistrial and you could retry the case. He managed to get all 24 to agree that the person was not guilty. So, if you compare that, where he, by the way, had in his purview looking at James Comey. And now you have this, which is basically Lindsay Halligan. What did she have? A New York minute to look at the case? She obviously couldn't have reviewed the case thoroughly. She couldn't have talked to all of the prosecutors. She couldn't have read the evidence herself. She certainly doesn't look like had any sort of defense presentation. All of the normal things that a U.S. attorney who's responsible under, just to be clear, under a Republican or Democratic administration. So I want to make sure people understand this is not partisan. I worked for many Republican and Democratic administrations. This is what all of them would do. And this is why this is just so unheard of. She didn't do any of that.
Is the shock and outrage from the legal community proportional to the insanity with which this is happening? Because in the discourse right now, actually what you see is, a bunch of people saying, well, Donald Trump was prosecuted by the Department of Justice too, and this is just politics as usual. You sort of need like a unanimous legal community to react with outrage and defiance in the face of something like this, if it is so radical, because if it doesn't, people who really can't parse these things end up in kind of a whataboutism loop.
I don't think that there is any question in the legal community that this is absolutely beyond the pale, that any normal administration, Republican or Democrat, would not do this. The idea of, I think it's non-lawyers who say, well, well, wait a second. Donald Trump was prosecuted for false statements or obstruction of justice. And so why shouldn't Jim Comey? This is where it's like, I'm going to be the dog with a bone because I say this over and over again when I'm on MSNBC, which is facts matter. I mean, this is where the reason they're not comparable is because the facts are different. If just to be clear, if there were facts to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that James Comey lied to Congress and obstructed justice of obstructed Congress, I would be going, you know what? The fact that he's a former FBI director in some ways is more reason to hold him accountable, not less, any more than when a former president were to lie or to obstruct justice, he should be held to account. And the fact that he has a higher position is more reason, not less reason. So if the facts were there, I would not be outraged. I'd be sitting there going, you know what? It's important to hold people at the top accountable, not just people at the bottom. When the Mar-a-Lago classified documents case happened, one of the things that Professor Ryan Goodman at NYU and I did was we did a compilation of all of the lower level people who had been prosecuted, who were in jail for doing far less than what was alleged with respect to the president, to point out that this is not at all selective prosecution, that this is holding him to account in ways that lots and lots of people who were, in our view, either equally or less culpable had been held to account. So I think the answer to the, oh, isn't this just what happens normally? And isn't this tit for tat? Is answered by A, it isn't what happens normally. It is not what happens at the Department of Justice. It is not the case when I was in a Democratic or Republican administration that anybody at the department would ever suggest you go after somebody because of politics. And just to be clear, I want to make sure, like, I worked on Enron, that was under a Republican administration. And that was there was not an ounce of political interference. It was run exactly the way it would have been run under any responsible administration. And then the answer to sort of isn't this tit for tat? This is not sort of tit for tat when the facts are different. So again, we will see what ultimately the government is able to prove. But as we talked, have sort of said over and over again, so far, based on everything we know, the facts are so sort of clearly indicating that this is not a case where there will be a conviction.
On this sort of, because I am in my universe of people, I have an awful lot of conservatives that I'm seeing say things like, well, you know, when you talk about the Mar-a-Lago case, that was sort of different from the Stormy Daniels case and different from, you know, there was a lot of different things Trump was prosecuted for. Are there any of those in retrospect that you think, I wish they hadn't brought those? Those were not the ones, like, that did feel like that is giving them this cudgel right now. Because I was always a little bit like the Stormy Daniels one that Alvin Bragg brought, you know, where it was a novel legal theory. I said, like, it was always a shame to me that that was the one that really went forward, where just about everything else was slowed down. Like, do you, in retrospect, do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. Look, there's no question that the most serious case was the insurrection case, and that should have been brought and it should have gone to trial. Also, as somebody who was in the intelligence community, I actually think the Mar-a-Lago case, the president was begging for it. I mean, he was given a million opportunities to not have that charge. And that's one where, as somebody who believes that in the rule of law, meaning that you treat people equally, the idea that a former president could get away with that when we were prosecuting low-level people, and that the message is that we don't take our classified documents seriously, I mean, that to me became an absolute necessity. If there was a conviction, I think there was substantial reason that I don't think the sentence should be particularly severe if you look at all the other sentences. But I thought those two cases were righteous and had to be brought for independent and different reasons. I agree with you that obviously the least serious was Manhattan. And I always think about this in a sort of what I'll call, it's not quite a legal selective prosecution because it's not really the total legal definition of selective prosecution. But you think about would this have been brought but for the name of the person? Not that the person isn't, like, the person could be guilty of it, but would that really be what you would normally do? Now, sometimes there's an answer to that, which is that somebody should be held to account. They're in a different situation, that it's important to send that message. A little bit like just before April 15th, that there usually are sort of, the tax division brings cases to sort of deter people. And sometimes they pick cases that are particularly, you know, that are going to get more attention because they want to have a deterrent value. But, you know, when you think about show trials in other countries, it's not that the evidence is always made up. It's that you're getting them for something that's like a speeding ticket, which lots and lots of other people do, and you've sort of selected it out in order to do that. I mean, we're seeing something that appears to in some ways look like that when you look at all the sort of claims of mortgage fraud because someone says it's their not their primary residence. And there are lots of nuances and factual issues, but it reminds me of when people had nanny problems where they weren't paying taxes. You know, that can be a form of selective prosecution. And so, look, I think Manhattan had that issue. But the answer isn't, because of Manhattan, you're going to indict Jim Comey in a bogus case. I mean, this is, I mean, not to, you know, put it into child terms, but it's like two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah, it's okay. I do think we need to actually to put some of these in more straightforward human terms, because I am watching an entire right wing, not exactly legal community, but legal community adjacent, twist themselves in knots to make the case that this is tit for tat. This is what it looks like, you know, when you go after, I'm just awash in this argument. And so I wanted to have you unpack why it's wrong. Cause you did it much better than I do, which me, I just become like, what are you talking about?
Frothing.
What?
Yes.
Yeah. Because one of them was guilty.
Well, that's a good way of putting it.
Fall is here. And for me, it's the season to reset. I love fall. It's time for flannel. You need new routines, a little less chaos, and hopefully a little more balance. And if you're going full bore every day and your life is not exactly balanced, you really need a good morning routine. And that's why I've been loving Mudwater. It's a coffee alternative made with cacao, chai, turmeric, and adaptogenic mushrooms. So you get a warm, focused boost without the jitters of a crash. Just mix it with hot water or milk, froth it up, and it's the perfect fall ritual to stay grounded and clear-headed. And now there's Nourish, the world's first mental wellness shake. It's like a protein shake, but for your brain and body. With 25 grams of clean plant-based proteins, nootropics, adaptogens, and probiotics, it supports focus, recovery, and digestion without fillers or artificial sugar. Just real cocoa, real vanilla, and ingredients that actually do something. If you want to fuel more than just your muscles, Nourish is a game changer. And if you're out and about, Mudwater is now at Target and Sprouts nationwide. This thing is getting big. Because pumpkin spice is nice, but focus, recovery, and gut support, even better. Every single ingredient in Mudwater's products are 100% USDA certified organic, non-GMO, gluten-free, vegan, and kosher. There's also zero sugar and no sweeteners added. Ready to make the switch to cleaner energy? Head to mudwater.com and grab your starter kit today. But just so you know, Mudwater is MUDWTR.com. Right now, our listeners get an exclusive deal, up to 43% off your entire order, plus free shipping and a free rechargeable frother when you use code ASKGEORGE. I use this frother all the time. That's right, up to 43% off with code ASKGEORGE at MUDWTR.com. After your purchase, they'll ask you how you found them. Please show your support and let them know we sent you. What do you have any thoughts? This wasn't in the initial show, but now that I'm in my head, like some of sort of the National Review types are saying, you know, I saw Andy McCarthy did this, said, no, this is wrong. Like this is, and people do it with sort of an enormous amount of throat clearing or whatever, but they do seem to know it's wrong. Is there, will the conservative legal community do anything to push back? Will that matter to Trump and this DOJ that they are, even by people who are purportedly on their side, who love to make excuses for them, are saying, yeah, you guys can't do this. This is not cool.
I would hope it would, but let me just give you the counterpoint. And I'm going to go back to Abrego Garcia, you know, who is the person who was extracted from this country in violation of a court order and then left to languish in a prison after he was extracted from this country. Judge Wilkinson in the Fourth Circuit, who is a always try and sort of make sure people understand who he is for conservatives. Think of sort of like a Ruth Bader Ginsburg type. He, for the left, he is revered. He is like Judge Luttig. I mean, he is somebody who the right legal community holds up as being a serious jurist. He wrote the most heartfelt sort of cri de coeur, sort of this, that
I remember
this
is,
it was, this is wrong. And he said, by the way, when you've done something wrong, you make it right. I couldn't imagine, I kept on thinking about it in terms of, could you imagine going into your boss, whether it's Larry Thompson, a Republican, or Robert Mueller, a Republican, or Merrick Garland, a Democrat, and going in and saying, we have removed somebody, it turns out by mistake, illegally, and they are now sitting in a prison in El Salvador, and their first human reaction would not be, how, like, well, essentially, what are you doing to get him back? Like, how are you remedying this? And in spite of Judge Wilkinson writing about that, saying, this is wrong, you have violated the law, you have fired somebody for being candid with the court about what happened, you are jeopardizing the relationship of the judiciary and the executive, and that creating a friction that is going to be perilous for the entire country and both institutions, and it's not too late to pull back. Do you know what happened the next day? The next day, the White House tweeted out a cartoon drawing. They took the New York Times cover about the Abrego Garcia ruling, and they wrote on it, essentially, he's never coming back, just making fun of it. Like, none of that resonated. None of that caused a moment of self-doubt, of having concerns, the human concerns about the person. And I just do need to say that I am always very skeptical if Mr. Abrego Garcia was a rich white person, whether the same tack would have been taken. That there was a part of me that just kept on thinking, you know, because you're extracting sort of people from primarily from the Black and brown community, they're somehow lesser humans, and it's okay to let them rot and they won't have the political resonance for the American public to vote and care as much.
I think that's true. I also think that Trump, you know, when you think about the political project of othering immigrants, you know, there is, obviously we could talk about the judicial inequities between, you know, race and socioeconomic status. But I think in that case, it's actually more that Trump has really, over the last decade, moved a significant number of Americans' hearts toward a hardening against people who are in this country, whether even if they have protected status, like Andre, the gay hairdresser who was sent to rot in CECOT totally wrongly. Like, Abrego Garcia wasn't the only person that Absolutely. Was completely innocent that they shipped off. I think that Americans, I actually think the dividing line here is people see people who are like natural American citizens versus people who are immigrants, and they're that Trump has really hardened the hearts against immigrants in this country. Like, I don't know. Now we're debating something that's probably, I don't know that there's an answer to, but I guess that's how I would look at that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, I don't know. I mean, this, we started on this because you said, you know, do I think that there's, if the conservative legal community were to sort of voice strong opposition, you know, would that have an effect? And, you know, I gave this as an example.
No.
Yeah. My point is that we've been there and that we've had some of the most leading lights in the conservative community say that.
But I guess my only last thought on this is just when you talk about this and you say, like, I can't tell you how unusual this is. Like, it sounds to me like this should shock the conscience in a bipartisan way of all the professionals in this community. And so I guess, why isn't there a backlash of some kind?
I think there will be. And this is where the one thing that is, I mean, there are some various positives. So the backlash to the Jimmy Kimmel, I think that blew up. I think people sort of saw this as an attack on all of our First Amendment rights. They understood the idea. You don't have to like Jimmy Kimmel. You don't have to like what he's saying. He has a right to say it and you shouldn't be taken off the air for it, et cetera. Jim Comey is a wonderful, wonderful public speaker. He is very charismatic. In the same way that Donald Trump, in some ways, was given a megaphone and a spotlight when he was being criminally investigated and then being prosecuted, a megaphone has been handed to somebody who is a very, very cogent, smart speaker. And he is going to have a forum and people are going to be listening to him. And that could include not just sort of legal motions, but hearings that could include discovery. I mean, this is the kind of thing where there could be that kind of backlash. And I really don't think that there's going to be a conviction here. Again, well, remains to be seen if they can pull a rabbit out of the hat. But again, all of that can lead to a sort of very spectacular way in which, like Jimmy Kimmel, there is another example of the Americans being able to look at this going, this is the weaponization of the Department of Justice. Stop saying, oh, we are both, you know, only Biden weaponized. I mean, this is where facts matter and you will see this explode.
The Biden DOJ that prosecuted Hunter Biden.
And a sitting U.S. Senator Menendez in New Jersey. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, could go on and on and on.
Can we just contrast for what this has been on my mind? Like the Menendez case, and maybe you'll tell me that the facts are so different, but like Holman just taking a bag of cash and Menendez doing it. Isn't that the gold bars? Like, isn't that basically the same thing?
So there is a big difference. Homans was not yet a public official, but he was, the allegation is he took a bag of cash with $50,000 in it, which, by the way, is not how you usually get paid. I mean, usually people have checks or Venmo or PayPal. So like, it's already incredibly suspicious. Also, by the way, if you were innocent, Sarah, and somebody said, oh, there's a transaction and the FBI did it and it's on tape, and your position is that didn't happen, you would be the first person to say, release the tape. I want the entire world to see that this didn't happen. You know who's not saying that?
James Holman.
Exactly. So the point is, it's not quite the same because Holman's would have to... basically, you'd want to wait to see, was he going to carry through with this once he became a public official? I mean, the signs are, assuming the allegations are true, is that he would have. So you would just wait for that. Because Senator Menendez was a senator at the time, you didn't have to wait for that. So that's with that difference, you would, of course, any prosecutorial office, Republican or Democrat, in normal times would keep that investigation open and see how it played out.
This show is sponsored by Mint Mobile. If you're still overpaying for wireless, it's time to say yes to saying no. At Mint Mobile, their favorite word is no. No contracts, no monthly bills, no overages, no hidden fees, no BS. That's why so many people are making the switch to Mint Mobile. Ditch overpriced wireless and their jaw-dropping monthly bills, unexpected overages, and hidden fees. Plans start at just $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ready to say yes to saying no? Make the switch at mintmobile.com/askgeorge. That's mintmobile.com/askgeorge, one word. Upfront payment of $45 is required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for the first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on the unlimited plan. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. You were the FBI's lawyer. Like, what they just summarily dismissed it. What's happening there?
Well, so that would have been a DOJ call, like within less than an FBI call. The FBI could have significant influence on that when there's a disagreement between the FBI and the prosecutors, but ultimately it's a prosecutorial call. But the reporting is that Emil Bove and other people looked at this and said, oh, we're shutting it down. That just makes no sense to me whatsoever. And I think it's so great that you're bringing it up because you have sort of weaponization as to your enemies, but you know, for your friends, nothing. And you see that sort of in not bringing cases and giving pardons, but then also bringing cases where even if your own people are saying no, you just remove those people until you can find a lackey who says yes.
Which again, I'm just going to make a distinction. I was going to go back to this. The difference between Kimmel is that Kimmel is a famous comedian and average Americans got up in arms, like, you know, boomers who are just never going to cut that cord. They're with the late night shows till the bitter end. Good on you. But like, everybody, you know, I'm sure Iger and Disney, people are cutting their Disney Plus subscriptions. Like, they felt a public backlash. I'm talking about the professional legal community. Like, what I can't understand is why professionals, and because you keep coming back to this, like how abnormal it is, how professionals would never. And I know voters, they don't understand those types of things. Like, that really is the part where those are processes that they're not privy to. Those are invisible lines that they can't see. And so they'll fall for somebody being like, well, these two things are exactly the same. And you've got to spend all this time giving your professional reasons, unpacking why they're not the same. But the people who can see the lines, who do understand the professional obligations. I know that, you know, James Comey's son-in-law, he resigned, but like, should there be mass resignations at this point? Should there be people speaking out publicly? That's what I mean, is that for the professional side.
And then, by the way, I famously have a question for you. Since I've heard that, which is, by the way, it's very much in keeping with this, the exact thing we're talking about, because I've heard that George doesn't ask a lot of questions. So I think it's people need to know you actually don't just ask questions. But okay, let me answer. Yes, of course, that people should be speaking out more. I think the issue of resignation is a harder one. I think that if you are at the Department of Justice and you are not being asked to do something that you think is illegal or immoral, it is a complicated question because, you know, one, you can have a family, you can have a life, you know, there's enormous consequences. It's not a great job market right now for a lot of reasons, including the attack on law firms by the president. And you could decide you don't want to free up a space for somebody. So there are just a lot of reasons to stay there. Obviously, if you yourself are being asked to do something, you know, it's not indentured servitude. You have every right to say no. You may get fired for that. But, you know, that's, to me, that's sort of a very different situation. Especially if you think it's illegal, you obviously can't go along with it. Period, the end. And if you think, for instance, it violates DOJ policy, or you think that this is selective prosecution, or that there's not insufficient evidence to bring a case against James Comey or anyone, you have to resign if you are being told that you have to do it. That's sort of a no-brainer. I mean, there's otherwise you are actually complicit. So I think that's complicated. So I wanted to ask you about sort of this issue of when you say you're hearing from people and they're sort of like tit for tat, et cetera. Here's an example. I'd want to know, what are people who are outraged on the right, who were completely outraged when Bill Clinton on a tarmac has a happenstance meeting with Loretta Lynch, even though Secret Service is there, even though her husband is there. Now, there was an open investigation of Hillary Clinton at the time, but just that meeting alone, there was no one said anything. There was no agreement. There was no decision that was allegedly made then. There was just the meeting and the, you know, and to be fair, the appearance of impropriety, but nothing about actual impropriety. How do you square the outrage over that and the, you know, the blood in the water media frenzy over that with actual presidential ordering of a charge, which your own people are saying there's insufficient evidence of?
I mean, this is why I'm asking you why there's not hair on fire. Like, because here's what the right knows how to do that I feel like, I'm not even going to say the left, I'm just going to say sort of the pro-democracy coalition, that big, broad pro-democracy coalition that's not sort of dug in on you know, covering for Trump. Like, they're like, I'm not a huge sports person, but you know how when soccer players do the fake big flop, you know, they get like kind of lightly touched, but they fall over and, you know, because they're trying to get the refs to blow the whistle. The right knows how to play the refs and do the big flops and say, this is outrageous. Do you think the average American understands the significance of Bill Clinton on the tarmac? No. What they understand is when they turn on Fox News, there's, you know, men and women in suits who have, you know, law for, you know, did this kind of legal work under there, who are freaking out about how bad it is and talking in these extreme terms. And then there's an enormous media ecosystem there to sort of fan the flames of that outrage. And also, I will tell you that one of the most significant forces on our politics right now is the asymmetry between levels of corruption. So Americans believe that there is corruption on both sides. However, part of what happens is they take something like Hunter Biden's laptop and they make a 12-course meal out of that scandal, right? And it doesn't matter that Hunter Biden is not the president, right? It is all about the Biden crime family. There's a narrative, but there's, you know, they dig in on the laptop and the this and the that of it all. They did that with Benghazi, right? They know how to make a meal out of a single thing that feels scandalous versus Donald Trump, where if you and I do a podcast every week, the topic of corruption will be different. Now, corruption will be the through line, but we will have to, like, this is where I will sort of never let go of my frustration with the way that the cases were brought against Trump, because it was like all of a sudden there were so many that Americans actually were like, I don't know, maybe there's a prostitute in there somewhere. You know, like they couldn't keep them straight. It was like white noise. And so so all the legal scholars are on TV and you're trying to like parse them apart. Well, that's not enough for people to get, you know, their minds around. And so that is just a very different way of doing sort of the narrative work. And I think that's having a big impact.
Yeah. So I think that is one of the things that Donald Trump is maybe because of his media training or maybe just instinct or whatever, for whatever reason, is very good about being a dog with a bone. And so, you know, when there's bad news, like the Jimmy Kimmel thing was obviously a gigantic misstep, right? It blew up. You even have sort of Sinclair, backing out and saying, yes, we're going to now put him back on the air. So, that's one where, I see that if you were on the left, you'd be like, every day should be Jimmy Kimmel Day, right? And everything should be about Jimmy Kimmel. And even when somebody's going, look at the birdie over here, you're like, this, by the way, this is what you do when you're a prosecutor and defense lawyers. I've been both. The defense lawyer wants to sort of change the subject and divert the attention of the jury. And your job is to go, I'm sorry, we were talking about Jimmy Kimmel, or we were talking about Epstein.
We were talking about Epstein. Yeah,
exactly.
I think that the flood the zone ability to keep people hopping from and trying to make sense of different scandals. And I do think that this is, I my frustration with the, I just think the communications capabilities have not caught and instincts on the people who are trying to oppose Trump. Even after all this time of him doing the flood the zone thing, like it is a, people understand that it's the strategy. But it is hard when, as you say, like every week you've got a new thing, like James Comey, it is an enormous new Rubicon being crossed. And it's like, we've got to go onto it. And yet that means we're not talking about Epstein. It means we're not talking about the plane from Qatar where they're the, you know, like, I mean, there's just so many things. This show is also sponsored by OneSkin. If you've been noticing hair loss, thinning, or shedding lately, you have to hear this. The scientists at OneSkin have developed a scalp serum called OS1 Hair that targets the dysfunctional aging cells that cause it. In a clinical study, participants saw on average a 40% increase in hair density after 6 months. And in a consumer perception study, 75% had new hair growth after just 3 months. For those of you familiar with OneSkin, you know their patented OS1 peptide is scientifically proven to target aging at the cellular level. It's what powers their skin and sun care. Now it's targeting age-related hair loss and thinning. OneSkin is a huge part of my skincare routine already, and OS1 Hair is just another way I can keep my hair and skin looking younger. OneSkin customers have been obsessed with this new launch, saying things like, my hair feels fuller and looks smoother and shinier. OS1 Hair is drug-free, prescription-free, and since the texture is a lightweight, water-like serum, you can style your hair just like you normally do. OneSkin was founded in 2016 by an all-women team of scientists with PhDs in skin regeneration, stem cell biology, immunology, and bioinformatics. I don't know what that is, but sounds smart. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. For a limited time, you can try OneSkin with 15% off using code AskGeorge at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code AskGeorge. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Thanks, OneSkin.
Yeah. And I mean, look, the problem is you really, the answer isn't, oh, you can't cover James Comey. That's the problem. But I do think a lot of times what you do have to wipe out is the noise about, oh, we're going to take over Greenland, or just covering his invective where there are no new facts. It's, you know, to me, that is where, you know, this is the problem of the Trump understanding the news wants something new. And so that's what's going to happen. But, you know, for politicians, they can stay on message. But anyway, this is literally the only experience I have on this is when I think about a courtroom where, you know, what you do as a prosecutor is you want to make sure that you are keeping the jury focused on the issue and not letting distractions sort of muddy the waters. That is a key part of your job.
Yeah. And now that we are, so we're almost an hour deep, and I had like three other topics that we haven't even gotten to. You know, we've got these U.S. attorneys that are being fired, which I don't, in our short time left, we've also got this, here's actually maybe the one I'd like to ask you about that sure. To me is, as we close, I've been interested in. So Trump issued a memorandum this week, the subject of which was countering domestic terrorism and organized political violence. So it says campaigns of domestic terrorism and political violence often begin by isolating and dehumanizing specific targets to justify murder or other violent actions against them. They do so through a variety of fora, including anonymous chat forums, in-person meetings, social media, and even educational institutions. And it goes on to say the Attorney General shall issue specific guidance that ensures domestic terrorism priorities include politically motivated terrorist acts such as organized doxing campaigns, swatting, rioting, looting, trespass, assault, destruction of property, threats of violence, and civil disorder. So obviously I'm not a lawyer, but I wouldn't think things like doxing and trespass traditionally have been construed as terrorism. And it seems like Trump is casting a really wide net here to justify investigating people who disagree with him. Because the Comey thing is like a specific instance of a broader thing that is happening, which is that they want to prosecute their political enemies broadly.
Yes, and that's why you're seeing also talk about investigating George Soros and other people who give money to Democrats. I mean, this is so transparent. That is, you know, again, if there's some actual factual predication for it, great, but that's not what it says. This is just like, I'd like to look at people who are giving money to Democrats. I mean, that's not a crime. And you know, when I was listening to you, Sarah, and you were describing what this is, this sort of new executive order, I was thinking, oh, so I guess he's going to look at the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. And that was very much like his executive order about Antifa, not entirely, but if you looked at the language of that, you're like, oh, so I guess he's really interested in people who attacked our democratic system and wanted and did so violently and were trying to prevent the transfer of power. I mean, he made Antifa sound like that, but I was thinking, you know what? You know who else has been doing that? People you pardoned.
Yes.
And so it is so transparent that is what's going on. And this is where I have to say, it all traces to, and this is to be an egghead, the Supreme Court of the United States is an authoritarian institution in terms of what they have let loose in terms of the immunity decision. And they have a view of the executive, which is not the unitary executive. It is a view that is being at least changed into the unitary government, where there's very little congressional power and very little judicial power. And so they're creating this authoritarian regime, and they have so much to blame for that kind of licensing of what you're seeing, that a president thinks they have that power to do that. And remember, the reason is because in the Trump immunity decision, they said how the president deals with his Department of Justice, he's entirely immune. The specific wording was that even when the president is telling his attorney general to engage in a fraud in connection with the Georgia election, that is immune from prosecution. So when you read that, what do you think the message is to a president of the United States in terms of somebody who is thinking about how far can they go? They're thinking this is a Supreme Court that's not going to pose any sort of check on things that are truly outrageous.
Well, then, just to ask a very easy, simple question to close, I want to something that we wrestle with at the Bulwark and talk about a lot and have been turning over is like the amount of damage that's being done when we're still in the first year of this term and then thinking about where we're going to go from here. Like, can you unwind this stuff? Like, let's just say hypothetically we have free and fair elections in 26 and in 28. You know, President Pete Buttigieg is there. Can you, these institutions that are being perverted in these ways and like, and the Supreme Court, there's like, is America, can we not go back, but can we restore these things, or are they gone forever after this?
So that's a nice, that's a very simple question.
It's just yes or no. So,
thank you, Senator, for asking that question. Here's how I'd answer that in a somewhat positive way. I hope we're in that situation where we have that problem, which is how do we deal with sort of new norms, new rules. There's no question we will not be the same anymore. That even if Trump is gone, and there will be mini-me's running around and people who want to emulate that, whether they'll be able to or not, you know, remains to be seen. That transgression has happened, and so we will always have to worry about that. I do think that you can get back to some not the same place, but it's some normalcy. And here's like a sort of analogy. We went through a pandemic. When you think about just how people are resilient and resourceful. And that was an incredibly painful time with nothing that could prepare any of us for what happened. And everyone sort of bounced back. And I just think people are resilient. They were even resilient during COVID in terms of trying to figure out how to make things work. And, you know, I think the Department of Justice, just to, you know, focus on the institution, I, you know, my myopic sort of thing I care about, you know what, whether it's a normal Republican or normal Democratic administration, judges and the institution can get back to normal, at least while that person, you know, when that administration is in place. So I think that we can. I just think, given what's happened in the last year, I think the midterms are kind of everything.
Okay. Well, I like to end on that note of hope. I'm often the only one saying that, no, I think we can do it. So it's nice to hear somebody else say, especially somebody as smart as you. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on and once again talking about the legal news with me. Don't forget to hit subscribe, leave us a review, guys, and we will see you next week.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. Oh, God. And close.